What's up, everybody, and welcome back to Relish the Journey. We're hanging out here in season three of the podcast, and we've got a fun one for you today. This is a first in podcast history that we're bringing back to life here. The podcast you're about to hear was originally season one, episode 49 of the podcast, and you're going to hear a familiar voice from season one, episode 33, also season three, episode four, Ms. Katie Williard. And what's cool about this podcast, it's actually the first time I literally could not host. I tried to talk in this podcast, as you'll hear, but had a horrible cold. When you talk as much as I do, sometimes you literally just lose your voice and you'll hear that. I literally just had to say, Katie, do it. be the host, which was neat for me because I got to see my idea of Relish the Journey, this idea that everybody's got a story to share, that we can learn something from everyone. I got to see it acted out in front of my very eyes, kind of without me. And it was really neat because to me it was proof that the idea has staying power beyond just me. And it was really fun to see. And on top of that, Hannah's story, who's the guest in this podcast, is absolutely incredible and is one that we all need to hear and listen to. So let's do that right now.
Hannah, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I love it. I've had a busy day, and now I get to chat with you guys.
Yeah. So for people that don't know you or your company, why don't you give us a little bit of background on, you know, what is Kindred & Co., who you are, all the things.
Sounds good. So Kindred & Co., short for Kindred & Community, is what I call a brave adoption community. To me, when I started my adoption, and we'll touch on that later, I was desperate to hear stories of people that had done this before me. I knew nothing about domestic adoption. And if you don't know anything about domestic adoption either, a big thing in the adoption community is called the adoption triad. And so you really can't go through a domestic adoption without, like, it has both the adoptee, the adoptive parents, and the birth family or biological side. And so that kind of makes up the adoption triangle. And so when I was going into this world that I knew nothing about, I was desperate for stories. I wanted to hear from birth moms. I wanted to hear from transracial adoptees. And this was back in 2015, and there was no Instagram Live. There was no Instagram stories. Some people were doing some stuff on, like, Periscope, which some people probably have never even heard of anymore. I was digging for stories, and all I could find was adoptive parent voices. They're the loudest. They're the most prevalent. And I kind of understood their story, and I was just looking to hear what this process has been like for the other sides. And so it's hard to not tell my adoption story with telling Kindred's story, but Kindred was really born out of wanting to give someone else something that I desperately wish I would have had when we started our adoption. So it's a community blog where we feature stories from all sides of the triad. So we hear from adoptive parents, and we hear from adoptees, and we hear from birth moms. And I think the beautiful part of adoption is when all those come together, because it's really messy and complicated, and there is beauty in it, but there's a lot of brokenness too. And I think it's really important to lift up those complexities instead of ignoring some of the hurt that can come with adoption as well. So we do weekly blogs, and we Instagram, and we talk to people, and we hold each other's stories with care. And then a whole other arm of what we do is helping people with their adoption profile book. When you go through domestic adoption process, you pretty much make a book that tells about your whole life in a few words, in a few pages. And that is the only thing that an expectant mom who's considering adoption has to look at to make it the biggest decision of her life. I can't imagine being in her situation and flipping through a book. I'd want to see every book in the whole entire world. But agencies give really little help on how to make this book. And so, again, I felt so bad for the person that has this beautiful story to tell and truly doesn't have the time to do it or tools to do it. And so we wanted to step in and help people do that part as well and do it well.
Awesome. So did the community part come first, or did the profile book part come first, or did it kind of all build up together?
So I would say the community part came first, but the profile books was always in my mind. I came from a background in marketing. I was a marketing director for a global orphan care nonprofit for almost 10 years. And so when I was going through the adoption process, my marketing brain was just making mental notes of gaps that I saw. Mm-hmm. And the first one I noticed was this need for community. I wanted to talk to other adoptive moms. I wanted to hear from other people going through this. I wanted one spot where I could go and read story after story. And I felt like there was only community within which agency you were using. And there's more of these now, but truly at the time you had to like search for something like this. And so that first thing I noticed was this need for community. I knew I was not a strong writer. And so I grabbed some other girls that had been writing about their adoption and said, would you do this with me? Cause I knew I couldn't do it on my own, or I would like throw something up and hope people come, but there would be no consistency if I didn't have writers and people wanting to join me. So I was so amazed that these girls said yes, but then, so that didn't come till later. But so the first gap that I saw was this need for community. And then shortly after, I started making my own profile book, was showing online, and got inundated with, how did you do that? Can you help me with mine? Where did you print it? And it caught me off guard. I just assumed the agencies were really helping their clients make this book. Mm-hmm. I started Googling and saw that there was only like one other profile book provider, and it was a very different style. And so I was just like, if I want this, maybe someone else wants a more modern photo focus storytelling book as well. But all those pieces really didn't come together till after our adoption was over and we were home with our girls. Kindred was officially born when they were like 3 or 4 months old.
Cool. So talk about your adoption a little bit. What was your story? How did you come to adoption as your the way that you built your family? And what was that journey like for you?
So this is the question that I get asked and I could talk about for 4 days. So I never know how.
I feel you. I'm the same way.
Yes. Just, I know you get it. To sum down this incredible story into whatever you're doing right now. So I always had this draw towards adoption. Josh and I, my husband, always talked about that while we were dating. When we were dating, I told him, like, you have to be willing to adopt or move to Africa someday. And he said, sure. And looking back, I'm sure he just said, sure, because he wanted to keep dating. But somehow we made progress. And we haven't moved to Africa yet. So we'll see if that happens. But we always just felt drawn to adoption. We were like 5 years into our marriage and we felt like something new was coming. We didn't really know if that was a new job or a move, or there was just this stirring in us. And as we were having more conversations, we were just feeling like it was time to grow our family. My husband was in medical school at the time. And so life was really busy and full. And I guess that doesn't change because I still use those same words to describe today. But we just started talking more, and as we were talking about what it looks like to grow our family, I felt so much social pressure to have biological kids first and adopt later. That was the story I had seen over and over again. So I never know how to like explain this well, but I just have never felt the need or want to be pregnant, which is kind of hard leaving the adoption community because so many women are coming from infertility stories, and I feel for them. That I cannot imagine going down that road. It must be so hard. But I kind of had this opposite story of just not wanting to have biological children and wondering why and what that meant, and why do I only want to adopt, and like digging deep, is that like a white savior thing, or like I've really had to work through why that's been, and I don't really have great answers. But Josh and I were at a Johnny Swim concert, who we love, this little husband and wife band, and she started singing these words that I don't know what's coming, but it's going to be good. And Josh and I started, I still cry when I think about it. Josh and I started crying in that moment. And it was just like this crazy feeling that we just felt like we needed to move forward with adoption now. And like, we didn't even really talk about it in that moment, but we both just knew what was happening. And so I think that a day later, we were driving and I said to Josh, well, when should we start our adoption? And I was fully expecting him to say, you know, when I'm done with med school, when we have more money. Like, we had so many reasons why we could say, no, not yet. And he turned to me and said, ready when you are, with like the happiest smile. And I was like, what? And like, then it was just like go time. Like, there was this switch of it, like, okay, this is the new thing. Like, this is what we're supposed to be doing. Again, I had worked for an international orphan care organization, so we always thought we'd pursue international adoption. But at the time, like Josh in med school and a lot happening in international adoption, we kind of made this switch together to do domestic. Once we heard about the opportunity to be part of Birth Mom's Story, not just Child Story, that was really exciting to us. And so we jumped in again to domestic adoption, not knowing anything about it. And that's why so much research and why I want to hear so much stories. And so this is a weird caveat of the story that I love to tell. It takes a second. It's not going to make sense now, but it will make sense in a little bit. But when we were in the adoption process, I had been praying the year before and hoping that this crazy number that had been showing up in my life for like 10 years since high school, so more than that, like 15 years, would have meaning. Like everywhere I went, the number 37 kept popping up. Like if a bus caught me off, or if I got a number at a food line, or, and for the longest time, my family was making fun of me, but then they, whenever they were around me, they saw it too. And so then it became like this running joke in the family that when they saw 37, they would text me a picture, or I would get all these little antique gifts of things my mom found with 37 on it. And, years later, I was just like, what does this number mean? Like, am I going to die when I'm 37? I just was like, wanted it to have meaning because it was just a silly number. And so we'll get back to that story later. But we're going through the adoption process. Josh was in med school. Way back in the fall, he had chosen a date to take this huge med school test. And it's like the test you take to get into residency. He had been studying for it for years. He had finally picked the date. It was going to be in April. And then we knew after the test, he would have 2 weeks off. And it was his only 2 weeks off during the whole year. So we are hoping and praying that something like a baby would be home or something would happen around that time so he could help me with the baby during that time. So we did our home study in the fall. We became a waiting family at the end of December. We saw, they call them situations. So like we would get sent information on expectant mom, and then we would decide if we wanted to show our book to that mom or not. We saw about 13 of those between January and April, and we never showed our book. And we were really drawn to some of them, but for some reason we just never felt like it was our story or our time. And now it's the beginning of April, and we are like, okay, our this time frame that we were magically hoping for is like not gonna happen. We're not feeling it anymore. So we're getting a little discouraged. Meanwhile, let me back up a little more too. My husband's joking the whole time that he wants twins. I think he's literally insane. My family's super spread out. I have 4 other siblings, and there's 10 years between me and my older brother, and I'm really close to him. So in my mind, like, it's really good to have one kid every 10 years. And that was my plan. But we'd go like look at registries, and he'd come up with this like huge stroller with 2 seats and does all these tricks. And I had this like European minimal does nothing stroller. And he was just like, you know, we can't get that one. We need the one for the twins. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I just thought he was being so like goofy. Like, I thought he was just trying to get under my skin. We also were kind of hoping that something would happen on March 7th. Because it would stand for 37, and then we could make a story out of it, like our baby was born, or we got matched that day, and then it could have meaning. But that day, like, came and went, and it was radio silence. Nothing happened. And we went to bed, and I wasn't going to say anything, but Josh said, I'm kind of sad nothing happened today. I was like, I wasn't going to bring it up, but I'm sad too. We're going to move on. So now, again, back in April, losing hope that this timeline that we're hoping for was going to work out, and I'm on the internet and I'm following a bunch of agencies that are, we went through a consultant that our consultant was working with, even ones that we weren't directly working with. I probably doesn't make sense, but we were following all these agencies on Facebook. This agency posted, about the need for a family for this expectant mom that was delivering very soon with twin girls. But it said you had to live in Utah. And so honestly, this was kind of mean, and I can't regret it, but in some ways I was like, what was I thinking? I tagged Josh in it with a winky face because I was like, haha, here's some twins, but you have to live in Utah and you don't live in Utah, which was terrible. And then he came home and he was like, Hannah, why don't you just call and ask me, like, if we could fly in? Like, maybe they're not as serious about that part and they really need a family. And I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't even think of that. So we call. It was so hard to get through or get any information because they put this out on Facebook. So, like, they just got inundated with people trying to
right,
final information, I guess, or that weren't even home study ready, and they just say, like, oh, I'll take babies. Like, not people got serious. So we had very little to go off of. I remember that night I did not sleep, and I talked to a friend that had two sets of twins, and she just was telling me how special twins are, and I was like, what is happening? But we both woke up with this, like, feeling that we just had to overnight our book to this situation that we knew nothing about. So we overnighted our book. We waited about a week, and it was the longest week ever. And then we heard that the expectant mom wanted to talk to us and a couple other families. So it wasn't even like a yes. It was a prepared to talk, which was so scary. It was a Friday evening, and we got on the phone, and we talked for like 2 hours to this expectant mom who had the most beautiful, thoughtful questions already. Like, she knew exactly what she was looking for. Excuse me. Sorry.
That's okay.
She knew just what she was looking for. And one of the questions she asked us was just like a fun question about like, what holidays do we like? And Josh was saying how I really like my birthday because we're always with my family in the summer and it's over my birthday and blah, blah, blah. And so we said, well, when's your birthday? And she said, March 7th.
Oh, my.
And Josh and I started, like, hysterically bawling on this phone call. and then That's we felt crazy. Like we needed to explain this whole story about why this number means anything to us. There was even, like, a few 37s in our book, like, in one of the T-shirts, photos I was wearing, like, a shirt with 37 on it. So we, like, told her this big, long story, and she was like, oh, that's cool. Which, of course, it, like, doesn't mean much to her, but to us, like, that moment meant the world. And later, my brother, after we had told everyone everything, my brother was like, Hannah, I think it's so cool that you wanted that number to be for the babies or for your child, and, you know, that number gets to stand for her. Now, every time you see it, you guys get to pray for her and think of her, and now we do. Like, that number has so much meaning now every time we see it, but it's just, like, it's so little, but, like, for that to be powerful, that story had to start. It started 15 years ago, like, that building of having to see it that much for it to have some significance.
Right.
So, yeah, it was just crazy, and at the end, she just said, I'm so confident that I want you guys to be the twins' baby, or parents, and, of course, we cried and celebrated. We FaceTimed all our families, and we had so much money to raise in 10 days between being matched and the girls being born and making plans to get to Utah. And so Josh took his huge med school test on a Friday, like less than 10 days later. We flew there Saturday. We had Sunday together to enjoy Salt Lake. And then the girls were born the first Monday morning of his 2 weeks off. And like, she was 37 years old. They were born at 9:37. They were 37 weeks along, they thought. We're not really sure.
Wow.
So it was just, it's that wild ride of an adoption story that has all these little things that are meaningful to the person. And every adoption story I hear is similar in some way, you know, like, there's just all these little moments that stand
right.
out.
Right.
I'm sorry. That was so long. I never know how to tell that story short.
No, that's okay. I don't think there is a short way to tell an adoption story. So I like hearing all of the nitty gritty details. So
great.
It is there really incredible. So you went through this whole process. So was your girl's mom, was that the first situation that you presented to? Did I hear that right?
It was.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah. That was crazy. We were not expecting that. We felt like we were tossing a coin, but we felt like we had to toss it.
Right, right. Knowing,
not expecting it to land where it did.
Yeah. That whole process of knowing when it's right to present, I think, is something that you're talking about community and, you know, wanting to hear from people who have been through the process. And that was something that we struggled with, I know, was like, how do you know when it's right? How do you know when the situation, because you feel called in a way to all of the situations because of your desire to be a parent. So yeah
it was
incredible.
It was really hard. I mean, I carried so many of the women's stories I read with me and thought about them a ton, even after saying no. And like, the only thing that gave me peace about saying no was thinking someone else got this email and read it and said, yes, this is it. Like, and like, I don't know. You just have to go with this weird gut, and that's what we did.
Yeah. So how you're in an open adoption then with your girl's birth mom?
Yes, we do.
And how do you find that relationship? How have you struggled with it? How has it been awesome? How have you navigated that? And how, your girls are three, almost three?
Yeah, they'll be three in April.
Okay. So how has it changed and grown and been hard and been fun and been all of the things that an open adoption relationship is?
Yeah. This question is a little hard because there's just some parts I like can't tell.
Right.
And that always gets really tricky. But I was so scared about open adoption at first. I didn't really get it. Josh was really the one that really like did more research about it and was the one talking to me about it, which was really cool. But once we got it, we couldn't imagine not having it, I guess.
Yeah.
And so especially I cut this whole part out of our adoption story, but when we got to Salt Lake, because there was such little time between being matched and the girls being born, we didn't really have time to build a relationship. I didn't know what she was expecting for hospital day. I didn't know what she was expecting for names. Like, it was really overwhelming. And so we went to dinner the night before, and I just said, you know, tomorrow is your day. Whatever you want is what tomorrow is going to look like. If you want me there, I'm there. If you don't want me there, we will step away. Like, tomorrow is yours. And I'll never forget. She grabbed my hand and she was like, Hannah, tomorrow is our day. And I still can't, like, it wrecked me. And I still wanted to go into the next day loosely because I knew that could change. Mm-hmm. And so I went in not knowing if I was going to be there to watch the girls be born or see them at another time or if they would even be my girls. Like, you know, there's so many questions. And so it was time to like go to the C-section and a social worker walked in and she was assuming that she was going to be the person in the room with our girl's birth mom. And so she kind of in some way like claimed that or said that. And our girl's birth mom said, no, I want Hannah. Hannah's coming with me. And I was like, what? Oh gosh. And so I was so excited, but like this bond that happened immediately by holding this woman's hand and rubbing her head and telling her she's my hero as she's like delivering these beautiful babies that then are, sorry, I can like never tell this part of the story.
That's okay.
I didn't realize how powerful it was gonna be to like have both my girls' moms welcome them into life, like that we were both there. And I didn't really think about that at the time. It was much later when like she lives far away, I don't get to see her, I miss her. How like special those moments that we got to have together are. And especially that we get to tell, and I get to tell the girls that like, we were both there for you to be born. It's just so special. So, all that to say, I was not letting her leave the hospital without a way to contact me. A lot of agencies push you to not exchange any contact information. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, like we're slipping her something. So we gave her an email address and we emailed, back and forth for a long time. Some of the best advice I got was to let her lead. And so I did that for a really long time. But I would also like send updates, but I left it to her on like how often and which type of communication and that. And then since then it's gone up and down. There's times where we don't hear from her and there's times that we talk every week. And those times I don't hear from her are really hard. We have a birth mom. Her name's Ashley. She runs Lifetime Healing on our Kindred team and mm-hmm. she's amazing. And one of my favorite blogs she wrote is about when a birth mom goes silent. And I've talked to so many people that have experienced this. And I think it's really hurtful at the beginning, but I think you just have to realize there's so much grief and so many different things that trigger that grief of losing a child in a lot of ways. And they handle it so differently. They're each different. And so the best advice I ever got was to keep writing, keep sending updates, keep a box of letters that your child's writing so that when she does come back you can either give her that box and mail it to her or just keep sending updates until she says, you know, I really don't want to hear from you anymore. Then that's very clear, but until she says that, our job is to keep communicating. And so that's kind of how we do things. And we talk to the girls all the time. I just printed a little book with some photos of them with their birth mom because I wanted to start talking about it, and it helps to have like some tools around to do that. But yeah, it's a roller coaster. It goes up and down and we just kind of go with the flow of it.
Yeah. It's really powerful to hear you talk about it. And it's something that as I am new to navigating this open adoption, I always struggle with knowing how much to share and what I can share. And how do you encourage other either adoptive families or even birth moms that you might work with? How do you encourage them to share their story while respecting the limits of their family and knowing what's okay to share and knowing what's not. And we want to be these voices in adoption, and we want to be talking about the hard and the heavy and the real and the beautiful parts of it. But at the same time, I just want to respect my daughter, and I want to respect her mom. So how do you encourage families through that?
Yeah, it's definitely a balance. I've really learned from other people on this one, and a lot of it is like thinking about would you want your kid to learn something about their story from someone else? If you want them to know it from you first, then it's not best to share those parts of the story with other people. And then also, like, who is the main character of the part you're telling? If it's not you, then it's really not right to share, especially because a lot of times, like, we don't know how our children, and they're the adoptees of this, how they're going to feel about their adoption story later. And I made a few mistakes in the beginning where I was so excited about adoption. I wanted to educate people. And so, like, I would just start telling strangers probably too much. And I've learned to, like, have those pocket answers that, you know, that's not my story to tell. And I've read so many blogs recently that of parents that have older adoptive children. And so they, like, put it back on, like, when, like, a grocery store clerk says, you know, I don't know, ask just, like, a personal question, they, like, turn to their kid and say, do you want to answer that? Like, give them the power to own their story. And so it's complicated. I think less is more in most situations. Definitely anything about, I think, birth mom's situation and in her life and why she made the decision she did is pretty private information. And, yeah, I think it's hard. I get that balance. But I try to tell my perspective of the story, I guess.
Yeah. You hit the nail on the head. And, you know, we're so excited about this journey, and we're so excited to talk about how great it's been and to educate. So, like, keeping that in the back of your mind, that's great advice. I think something else that I've heard you talk about before on Instagram and in all of the ways in which I follow you. But I think that there's a lot of stereotypes tied to adoption and to all of the different pieces of the adoption triad. So people who think adoptive parents are self-righteous, or people who just assume that all adopted children are going to be damaged and they're going to grow up with all of this, you know, darkness in their life. And the idea that birth moms, you know, have stories that involve a lot of struggle, and they're, you know, how do you combat all of those stereotypes, and how do you respond to people that are so blatantly forward to ask you those types of questions and to use that kind of language to you?
It's a good and hard question. There's a lot there to unpack, but I think it's twofold. One, I think a lot of those things come from not being educated, come from fears, come from what we've seen on TV, come from, I don't know, a whole bunch of different sources. And so I think that's why it's so important to educate people, and why I think Kindred's so powerful is to tell stories of positive adoption stories and beautiful open adoption stories. And but it also brings in that complexity to it. I know for me, when I was seeing situations about expectant moms, none of them fit the stereotype. Like, I saw every age range. It's not like they were all teens or all drug addicts or all homeless. Like, all these things that terribly we think of was not the case. And now I have so many birth mom friends that are not that way. And so that's why I think we need to tell stories and really lift up voices that have a story to tell. Because I think people that don't know much about adoption, they remember the one bad one they heard. And so I think that's why we really need to lift up not only the positive stories, but just kind of the bigger picture of adoption as a whole, so people get a bigger grasp of what it means and why an adoptee might be struggling, or you know, why is a birth mom coming to a place of considering adoption? I think having people tell their personal story is really powerful. But with that too, I think sometimes some things that we hear from adoptees or birth moms make us really uncomfortable as adoptive parents. And I think we need to sit in that and lean into that and ask, why is this making me feel uncomfortable? Why is this hurt? I think it's really important too to look where someone's coming from. I know some people get so offended by adoptee voices, especially on Instagram. And truly, I love listening to them because I think they have a lot to teach us. But it's always important too to think, look at like what situation they were in. Were they, was it through international adoption? Do they have any open adoption relationship? Were they in a closed adoption? With so many of the adoptees now that are able to tell their story came from this closed adoption era. And it's so interesting because now that the trend is moving towards open adoption, we're not going to know if this is better or, you know, making an impact on our children until 20 years from now when they're able to tell their story. So I don't know if this answers it, but I just think it's so important to listen and keep continuing to tell stories from all sides. So we have a better understanding of each other.
No, I think that totally answers it. And I think that it is also really important. You bring up your birth mom friends, and actually Miles and I, in our last episode, we actually talked with Ashley, and we got to chat about Big Tough Girl. Yeah. And lifetime healing and all of the work that she's doing with birth moms. And something that she and I touched on was, and you kind of just mentioned it, that idea of, you know, the stories we hear about adoption, and they are all either that horrible, terrible, scary story that makes adoptive parents or prospective adoptive parents kind of stop in their tracks, or it's the Hallmark card story of this, you know, the young teenage birth mom uses the placement of her child as her, you know, quote, redemption story, which I hate that term, but I don't know a better one. And I think that that Hallmark story is almost as damaging or more damaging to prospective adoptive parents as the scary stories. And I have really just kind of recently been interested to know about how you address adoptive families who are dealing with relationships that are a little bit harder with the birth moms who have, you know, maybe not been able to process some of their grief yet, or they haven't been able to take advantage of services like what Ashley is providing and, you know, helping to provide. And how, as adoptive parents, can we navigate those early years of open adoption when we're still dealing with this new relationship and the guilt and the heavy and the hard parts of a birth mom who may not be on that same path to, you know, quote, pulling herself up by her bootstraps and using this as a way to move forward and all of that.
Yeah. I would say it's not up to us, which maybe is a bad answer, but I don't think we can fix everything. And I was just telling a friend this recently, but any problem or situation or whatever's going on in her life was probably happening way before we entered the story. And it feels weird to insert ourselves. Like, who am I to like come in? I don't really know the dynamics of your life or your family or your support system. And so I don't, it's complicated, but I think people want their child's birth mom to never regret her decision. Mm-hmm. And that's the goal. And that should not be the goal, because I have never met a birth mom that doesn't regret it. Like, that's going to be a part that she has to live with. Even if it's in the best situation and that she's really, like, knows that child's in a good spot, she's still going to regret that she couldn't do what she wishes she could have done in that moment, you know? And so I think a lot of times we become, adoptive parents want to become the counselor or the fixer. And it makes for really hard relationships that way. They need support outside of that. I'm not really the best person to answer this, but one, I would try to get them to connect it to people like Ashley. She's always willing to talk to other birth moms. And I would go back to the agency hoping that they can be that support system, but you being the middleman to try to fix everything makes it really complicated. And your role was to step up and care for these children or child. I'm feeling like I'm talking in circles about this one, but it's complicated. But I think we put so much on ourselves to do it, and sometimes it's really not our place. And our role is to leave the door open and be available and keep communicating and keep sending updates. And sometimes it gets messy when we try to do things that maybe we shouldn't be interfering with, I guess.
I love your perspective on respecting your position within the triad and not speaking for an experience that you haven't had. I think that that's something that you do really, really well through Kindred, and the way that you pull in people, you know, you pull in adoptees and you pull in the birth moms to tell those stories, and you don't try to assume that you know what's, you know, something that you haven't experienced. I just think that that's really powerful.
Thanks. That was a huge, I guess, vision that I always had for Kindred is I can talk till I'm blue in the face about something, but like, especially when we started the bookmaking process, I can help them write their letters. I can tell them what I think they should say, but I haven't been a birth mom. I haven't placed a baby. I don't know what it's like to be sitting and making that such hard decision. And so as soon as I knew we were going to do profile books, I called Ashley and asked her, like, do this with me. Like, we can, I don't want to do profile books unless a birth mom voice is involved. And really our clients, their favorite part of working the process with us is getting that hour phone call with her and getting asked those hard questions. And a lot of things that we think we should say in those first moments, you're so brave, you're so selfless, we shower her with all these compliments. It's really not the right time to say it. And that's so hard for adoptive, hopeful adoptive families.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean it's never the time to say it. If you have a relationship later, or, but that first letter, it's really more about saying, I see you. I want what's best for you. We're going to come alongside you however you want us to. We support your decision, whatever decision that may be. Because in that moment, she's not feeling brave and she's not feeling selfless. And you, I think we all have those things that people say to us that we're like, oh, that doesn't really help. And she's really taught me that, like, saying some of those things that makes us feel really good doesn't really help in that moment. And so we do a lot of coaching with our clients on what does that mean to sit knee to knee with someone making this decision.
That's awesome. That leads me into another topic that I wanted to discuss, and it's handling things that people say to you that don't resonate. So, you know, telling a birth mom, you're so brave, you're so selfless, you're doing this great thing. What about as an adoptive mom, when people approach you and say, oh, I could never do what you're doing. You're so inspiring. You're so, you know, they praise you for this, you know, you're just building your family. You know, that's,
yeah.
I know that my husband and I, we talk about that all the time. You know, people come up to us and be like, oh, you're just wonderful people. You're such amazing people for doing this. We're like, no, we're just parents.
Right.
How do you move through that? And how do you come to a time, like, how do you come to just accepting those moments? Because I don't see them ever stopping.
Yeah. And I feel like we get a double whammy of that because of the twins. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I could have never done twins. And it's like, I don't, like, that's all I know. Like, you just do it. Like, the things you got to do in life, you just find a way. Like, I don't know. So yeah, we get it from the adoption side and how do you do twins side. I'm really not, I feel like talking about this so much and this being kind of my world, I should be better at these like pocket answers. I get so stuck and I'm not good at responding to people on quickly. I feel like I get too nice and I like understand where they're coming from. And I don't know. I get all in my head about it, but, I think I had a friend write a blog post about this the other day on Kindred, and I thought she just put it so well by saying, like, we're just growing our family. We were just taking the next step to do that. And we really reserve those wonderful titles for our kids' birth mom. Like, they're the ones that are raising their children and doing two full-time jobs. And while doing all that, like, making a really big decision to do what's best for what they thought was best for this child. So let's reserve those, like, wonderful, wonderful, I don't know, happy terms for her and how we view her. She's the one that made the brave decision, which is so funny because I know I just said, like, don't tell her she's that in that moment. But for someone that doesn't get it, it kind of turns the story and helps them understand that we're really not the savior here. We said yes, and she's the one that chose us, and she's the one that, like, did this. You know, I think it's so interesting, and I don't really want to get into all this right now, but I think sometimes flipping this story opens your eyes. I know when we started adopting, I didn't know that there was mixed feelings about crowd fundraising, and I've really been trying to learn and listen on that issue recently. Mm-hmm. And one thing I think has been sticking with me is, and I think it's just about flipping that story. And again, I don't want to go fully into this, but I think it's just eye opening that, if a hopeful adoptive family is raising $50,000 to adopt, they're celebrated. If a birth, an expectant mom was ever to raise $50,000 on a crowd fundraising site to keep her baby, that would be probably looked very down upon. Mm-hmm. And so I think that difference is just, we see it a lot in a lot of questions and conversations. And so anytime I think we can flip the story, it helps people understand that bigger picture of adoption.
Yeah. You mentioned early in your story that you knew that adoption was kind of in the cards for you for a long time. But now that it's your reality, has your worldview shifted? Has it changed the way that you respond kind of at large? The crowdfunding thing is the perfect example. You know, when you're looking at it from kind of your semi-sheltered, like, reality, but then you're exposed to all of these other avenues, it changes. How has the whole adoption journey and what you're doing with Kindred and all of these voices that you're learning, that you're hearing and that you're helping to share, how have those changed your worldview? I know that's like a really heavy question.
Probably changed it in every way possible. It's so interesting, but it's really seeped into like our whole being in a lot of ways. And part of it's because, you know, Kindred and everything else is just such a huge part of my life now. But yeah, I think especially the storytelling and listening to people that are different from you and have different stories makes me want to always listen to people that are different from me and to have different stories. And that really plays into race and listening to voices of color and how much we can learn from them. And I think a lot of people that we write off in society are the people we need to be listening to and learning from. And I'm not sure if I did or didn't do that before adoption. I can't really remember, but I know it's definitely become a huge part of Josh and I's life now is listening and handing the mic over to different people. Because their stories need to be heard. I think we tend to write out people or not feel like their story's valid and I think they're the most valid and most powerful. So yeah, I think even just graciousness in my day, like not knowing where someone's coming from or what they've been through. I know I have so many friends whose their child's birth mom was flown somewhere to deliver, and then they fly home like a day or two after delivering, after placing a baby for adoption. I can't even imagine. And so now I'm always like, am I sitting next to someone that like just placed a baby 2 days ago? Like I it's so around me now, and I know so many people in those circles. But it just makes you realize how many more are out there that haven't had that community and probably haven't had a chance to tell their story and haven't felt safe doing so. But I just love this like undercurrent, especially happening on adoption, of these other voices rising up, because I think the more that do, the more we'll feel safe to do the same. And I just think they're so powerful to sit and listen to.
Absolutely. How did you go about building that community? When, you know, you talk about having this craving more stories as you were preparing for your adoption. So after your girls were born and you started building Kindred, how did you develop that network specifically with birth moms? How did you find those people and encourage them and make them feel welcome to share with you?
I don't know if it was me, but let me think. I have a lot of ideas. I don't know if you guys do Enneagram, but sevens like have a bunch of ideas, and I've had a lot of failed ideas. I felt like I was going to do something bigger or like run my own business for a really long time. And I tried so many things that were great and fun, but in the end, like kind of failed, whether it was like photography or calligraphy or like, I was always doing something creative in some ways. And so it kind of felt like another idea. And I was so scared to tell my husband about it. But of course he was like, you're going to be great at that. Like anything I think of, he's like, you'll be great at that. But in reality, in my head, I'm thinking everyone else is just going to see this as Hannah has another idea. But I really felt like there was something different about Kindred. And I think what made the difference is so many of the things I had tried to do previously was me by myself trying to figure something out. And the first thing I did with Kindred was invite people into it. And I really think that's what made a huge difference and like truly made it have a community feel is I never want Kindred to be about me. Kindred is a place to like share and listen to all sorts of people. And I just keep pushing that along and making like a place for people to do that. And so I remember feeling so frustrated because I kept telling myself I have to start where I am. And when I started, I didn't know birth moms. I didn't know any adoptees. I only knew adoptive parents. And I was like, how am I going to have a blog or a community that's all about the triad when all I have are adoptive parents? And that was really frustrating. And I just had to kind of trust and keep building that voice and know that that's where I was now, but that's not where I wanted to be. But the first few months of Kindred was adoptive parents talking, which was exactly what I didn't want it to be. And nothing against my like main group of adoptive parents. I like absolutely love them to death and they know that. But it really changed reaching out to Ashley and bringing her in, and then organically just through sharing stories and saying, we want more adoptee voices. We want more birth mom voices. Instagram has this really cool adoption community. And so you just keep meeting people and people wanted to share their story. And, this past year I joined the board of a, foundation that helps birth moms get back on their feet. So I got to meet a bunch of birth moms through that. And I don't know, I guess it was just to keep moving forward and know that in the end, like right now I want more adoptee voices. I want more transracial adoptee voices. Like we're still not telling this complete story that I want to tell. And so we're always going to be striving for more voices. Right. It's hard because like, especially adoptee voices that I've talked to just aren't really ready to share yet, or might not there that they all aren't, but they're kind of just putting together their words and they're like processing whether they have or haven't met their birth family. And so even though I want more and I've asked some, they aren't all ready, you know? So that's it too, is that you need the right voices and it needs to be the right time for them as well. So,
right. You mentioned transracial adoption, and I know that your girls are Black. My daughter is biracial. Talk about that a little bit and how that has challenged you as a mom, as an adoptive parent, and just kind of as a human. How has bringing those girls into your life challenged you and changed you?
Even you asking this question makes me cry. So it's another one that I like can't talk about very well yet. I'm working on that. It's been so much like more beautiful and full and harder than I ever imagined it to be. Josh and I went to a very diverse and wonderful college, and it did a lot of work on racial reconciliation. And so in some ways we thought we were prepared to enter into this, but I felt like that all changed and became so much more real holding my Black children in my arms. Like, I'm still working through this, and I've like talked to a lot of people about it, but like the first few months I cried every night over those girls, wondering if they would have been better off in a Black family, realizing that I won't ever fully understand their story or their hair or the pain that they're gonna feel when they come and tell me someday. I can't do it. Oh, sorry. That someone made fun of them because they're different, which I know is like every parent's worst fear. Like, no matter what, kids are gonna get made fun of because they're different. But it was just this, it became so much more real. Like, I knew those things were real, and I believed racism exists. Like, but it became so different when it was your child. And so we've really been digging into that and listening and learning. And we're like, little things, like we're dedicated to living diversities because we don't want our girls to be the only Black children in their class. And I am so dedicated to like trying to learn their hair because I want them to be proud of their hair and I want them to know how to do their hair. But we also bring like a braider in so they get to know other people and get their hair cornrowed, which I can't do yet. I went to a workshop recently with the author of Raising White Kids. And if you're raising white kids and you're interested in this, please read this book. Yeah. And it was overwhelming to be sitting in a room with parents of white children that cared about race and wanted to raise their children to be aware of racism and stand against it, and how much that meant to me, knowing that's going to affect my children. they talked a lot about how we haven't had good models in our lives of talking about race and doing it well. And so our generation is the first one to like try to figure it out. And it's hard to do something when you haven't had good models on how to do something.
Right.
And one of my favorite things she talked about was she shared about how a bunch of parents are saddened that their kids don't have transracial relationships or relationships outside of their race. And she said, there's kind of a friendship breakdown because we're not telling a universal story. So if a white family over here is telling, I'm not trying to get political or controversial, but like if this white family's over here is only telling their children that the police are safe and that's it. And this black family over here is saying, you know, our relationship with the cops is complicated. And then those two kids meet in the playground, they become friends. At some point, their language is going to break down, and they're not going to be talking the same language. And it makes those racial barriers, like, bigger because there's a break in the story that's being told. And so it was just a lot of really thought-provoking questions like that. And so, yeah, we're listening when it comes to race. We're trying to be really intentional about where we live and how we live life and who we surround ourselves with. But it's a process and it's hard. And I, especially like the hair thing has been really hard, like sentimental, and I cry over it a lot, but we're getting better.
Yeah. My daughter's only one and I already like, it's the biggest stressor is hair. I never want her to think that it's something that is hard for me to quote deal with. Like I want to know, right. I just want to know everything there is to know about caring for it. And like you said, making her proud of it and feeling beautiful. And why is that what we focus on as moms? Why is that what we focus on? That's crazy, man. We've covered a ton. A lot of this, I think, kind of bringing it all full circle. What is like the one thing that you want most people to know about adoption?
Oh man. Such a hard question. I should have thought about this one more. I don't know. I guess I have like so many different pieces of advice, but they're all for different like sides of of the triad, I guess. Or like especially like if they're a hopeful adoptive parent versus not. But I guess I don't know. Like it's so complex that I guess I just want them to know that like that we all have a responsibility to like learn about it and listen to each other and understand the bigger picture of it all. I always tell like adoptive parents, hopeful adoptive parents, to not let fear win. I think fear stops us from doing so much that we want to do or that we're supposed to do. And had I let fear win, there'd be so many things not in my life right now that I'm so glad about. But yeah, I just want people to dig in and learn about it and not be so fearful about it. I think so many questions about adoption come out of fear, especially about open adoption. So
yeah,
I think listening to others and digging in when we feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, I love that. The fear, I think, is such a driver, especially as an adoptive parent early on in the process when you're considering adoption and then you make the decision that you're going to adopt. And then even through the process of evaluating situations, it's always fear first. And I love that that's your message, is don't let fear, you know, don't let the fear stop you and move through the fear. And when I talked to Miles way back in November, I told him that was my thing. It's choose love over fear every single time. And it, you know,
yeah,
that's what it takes.
For sure. I totally agree.
Cool. Yeah. So I'm going to try to talk again. Wow. That's bad. I'm sorry.
Oh, gosh.
All right. I'm going to talk very soft. So everybody lean in. Katie's three words were love over fear. What would you say your three words would be if you had to describe your life, your adoption journey, all of that so far?
Oh, man. I it's so hard to sum it down into words, but I always say, like, our story was so surprising. Like, all the things I had planned in my head, I wanted a boy because I didn't want to do his hair. I wanted one kid every 10 years. Like, you make plans, but it's not going to go the way you think. So you just have to, like, open your palms and go for this wild ride. So I would say, like, mostly surprising. All of this has been a wild ride.
Awesome. I'm not sure that Miles has it in him to do the sign-off here.
I don't think I do, no.
Is there anything else that you want to add? Anything that you want people to know about Kindred, about what you're doing with Kindred, or the direction that Kindred's going? I know we talked a lot about kind of adoption as a whole, but I just think that, you know, your business and your community, more than the business, it's the community of Kindred and what you're doing for the adoption world is just so big. And is there anything else that you want people to know about Kindred or things that they can look for? Or where can they find you?
Yeah, of course. First off, like, all are welcome at Kindred. That is a huge part of Kindred. And so you're welcome here, whether you just want to learn about adoption or you're in the triad or not. If you are adoptee or transracial adoptee or birth mom, we really want to hear from you. If you want to share your story, there's space for you at the table. Plenty of space. I just love getting to know people. I'm like a very relational person. So if you have questions, no matter how big or small, I'm available to you. I'm not like some scary person hiding behind my computer. But vision-wise, like, so if you need a profile book, I would love to talk to you about that. Big picture, Kindred, I want to get to know people in person instead of just behind Instagram and through live videos and stories. And so I have big dreams to, like, host retreats to gather with one another and sit with each other. And then we're in the very, very beginning stages of trying to plan a conference that would really be the first of its kind in its space. So I'm super excited about that. So, yeah, we want you to hang around, and we want to be with you in person. But, yeah, if you want to learn more, our website is kindredand.co. And then our Instagram handle is the same, kindredand.co. Super simple, but that's where we hang out like every day. So come join us.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thank you both for having me.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Sorry for the tears and the coughing and Miles' voice.
Yeah, sorry, just like
a big mess over here.
No, it's awesome. The tears are what make it legit. I'm the only one who hasn't. Yeah. I can't believe I am where I'm at. My daughter's had a fever for like, fighting
that's
a fever for a week and a half, and she's, it's the joys
so
of motherhood.
Hope she feels better.
Yeah, me too.
Sorry for listening. Sorry that you had to listen to that, I should say. I know it hurts me to listen back to that. My voice just hurt, but I still love the story. I love the fact that Katie was able to hop in and Hannah somehow wasn't distracted by my scratchiness. Hope you guys are enjoying these throwback episodes. And if you are, please subscribe to the podcast. Give it a 5-star rating. Leave it a review. Would love it if you do any of one of those things. Love it even more if you did all of them. We'll be here next week with another one of my favorites to unpack and give some added commentary to. So until then, hope you all relish the journey. I'm your host, Miles Biggs. Cheers.